trust that, you know, you want something to happen and that it's going to happen and be okay. Then I think it's start to listen and really not listen for a certain thing, but really listen in a way that says, I'm going to accept a voice, accept a feeling, and start to just be in tune with yourself. When I said, you know, just really start to breathe, I really meant that. Just really start to breathe. Because we don't give ourselves a chance sometimes to do that. So it's kind of like starting to breathe and then see what comes up for you. Let different ideas come into your mind. Meditation, often people say they can't meditate because they're actually trying to force a preconceived idea about what meditation is. But meditation can be being quiet and letting the thoughts that want to come in your mind come into your mind. And then look at those thoughts, because those may be some of the very things that are interfering with you living your life the way you want to.
Right, because I've tried some of the like self-hypnosis to become more focused and, you know, just to learn to concentrate on in things, because I always find myself like going off on tangents when I'm even reading a book or anything like that.
Right, I know what you're talking about.
And I'm not sure if that's a problem or if I need to correct that or what, but I've been using these like self-hypnosis tapes to try and correct that, and I find myself resisting.
Okay, I have to get off the air now, but I have done some self-hypnosis, and I have found it very effective for certain things. So maybe one of the things I'll talk about next week, I'll start off talking about self-hypnosis. If you're listening, maybe you could just call in, and I'll know, and we can go off on that. Because I think it has some real useful applications, but I do think there's a real method of doing self-hypnosis. When I just tried to teach myself that by myself, I found difficulty. But after I had experienced it with a person who was, you know, trained and did hypnosis, after they had gotten me in the state and I had a perception of what it was like, I could then do it myself. And so I currently do that. So, and sometimes we need a guide, and sometimes a tape will do that. I'm not always sure. But let's start off on this next week if you call me.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you a lot.
Yep. Right.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, that's it. The next show is ready. Tom's not here. Tom is not going to be here until the crafts fair is over. Go to the crafts fair. It started. I think I'm going to try and get by there maybe this weekend. And I just go for the artwork, you know, and the sheer artistry of it, because it's very beautiful. And last year, you know, somebody gave me something really wonderful, like this little cutting board, really round. It was very wonderful because I had no money and I just went up there to visit. And I think somebody else may have given me something too. It was very, very wonderful. They were just very kind people. And then I got, of course, a lot of people gave me wonderful spirit and energy. So that was very nice. Okay, I need to get out of here. I just want to thank you. I have totally enjoyed sharing with you. And I'm glad you're part of my sharing and my breathing. So in one breath, you know, one breath, one movement, we are a common breathing and a common listening. Love yourselves well, and think well of what you can do for yourself, you know. Treat yourself gently and kindly, and I will do the same, and I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Carletta, and it's just about 4 minutes after 1 o'clock. This is Emmanuel Goldstein filling in for Tom on the Weaponry Program, and this is WBAI in New York. And today we have a couple of special things this morning to talk about. Actually, one very special thing to talk about, and that is flag burning. And we have two rather special people to hear from, mainly Joey Johnson, the guy that started this whole mess by having the Supreme Court rule on his case, and also Dave Blalock, who also has been involved in the flag burning controversy. We'll be hearing from them in just a moment or two, and then taking your phone calls and having all kinds of other fun, too. We're going to start off with some music from The Clash.
Thank you. It's up to you not to hear me call out.
You know, I still say that's the best album that The Clash put out. A lot of people say it's too damn political. But so what? You know, I mean, how can you believe that art doesn't delve into politics, isn't allowed to delve into politics, like those who supported the ban on funds to the art exhibit a couple of weeks ago would say, oh, it's too political, therefore it's not acceptable for a National Endowment for the Arts grant. Artists have a lot to say about what's going on in the world because they affect the outlook of many people, and they also reflect the outlook of many people. They're the voice of you and me. And we heard two songs from the Sandinista record by The Clash. That's the one where they put out 36 songs. For no particular reason, they just put out a triple album, six songs on each side. And we heard two of them. We heard The Equalizer and The Call Up. And I hope, in addition to appreciating the music, you were listening to the lyrics, too, because there's a lot in there. There's all kinds of thoughts, probably the most relevant being in The Call Up. I guess the message is just to think against the mindless nationalist spirit. And I don't see that as being anti-patriotic at all. Now, you may think that that burning flags is anti-patriotic. Perhaps it is anti-patriotic. I mean, yeah, it could be anti-patriotic. I could see that kind of interpretation. But should it be illegal? That's the big question. That's the question that the Supreme Court threw at us this past year. And it's so funny because what so many people have lost sight of is what the Supreme Court actually said. The Supreme Court agreed with people that that burned the flag. No, they didn't say, oh yeah, go out and burn your flags, everyone. It's the right thing to do. No, they said it's part of free speech. And yeah, you know, that sort of makes sense if you've been living around here long enough and, you know, checking into things like the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all those other things that we started this country out with. It was a difficult decision, and it wasn't a unanimous one by any means. But it was a decision nonetheless. So it's not a bunch of anarchists and communists and homosexuals and all kinds of other people that mainstream America seems to be so afraid of. No, it wasn't them. It was the Supreme Court that said this. So these laws that are desperately being passed by panicky members of Congress are laws to get around the Supreme Court ruling, not to get around all these radical people that are not patriotic. No, it's to get around the Supreme Court. Are we saying the Supreme Court isn't patriotic? Well, that's quite a statement. Maybe they aren't. Maybe it's all a Russian plot, although the odds of that are becoming less and less every day, it seems. I'm sure there's someone out there plotting to do this. Anyway, enough of this rambling. We have some special presentations. First, a little background. I have in my hands the Emergency Committee to Stop the Flag Amendment and Laws newsletter. And well, it's a mouthful to say all that. The newsletter itself is only about 5 pages long, and I'll give out the address and phone number in a little bit. First, to lead into our first piece, which will be a speech given this past Sunday by Dave Blalock. This article entitled DC-4, Arrested on Capitol Steps for Flag Burning. Now, you may recall that the law was passed on October 28th, the law that made it a crime to burn a flag, that went above the heads of the Supreme Court, which is something I know a lot of us would have liked to have done in the past, and this shows how easy it can be. All you have to say is it's not patriotic, and you got a law all of a sudden. Because no congressman, no senator, no politician anywhere is going to vote against something that could be construed as making him look anti-patriotic or just not patriotic enough. It's a scary thing. You know, scares the hell out of me when people start talking like that. And when politicians are panicking and saying, oh, I know it's a crazy law, but I've got to vote for it or I'll be voted out of office because it'll look like I'm not patriotic. I mean, that sure brings back memories. I mean, memories that I've never had personally, but if you read a little bit of history, it's in there. Anyway, on October 30th, 2 days after the flag law went into effect, four people burned flags on the steps of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. The burning flags were juxtaposed on the news that night with massive demonstrations in East Germany. And the next day, only three people were charged. The fourth one was Joey Johnson, the infamous flag burner and now the Supreme Court precedent, who we'll be hearing from a bit later. He was somehow left out. He wasn't charged. Now, Joey was obviously upset by this, and he charged selective non-prosecution. And he stated, "Their attempt to sever me from the case by dropping the charges against me was an act of profound cowardice and desperation on the part of Emperor Bush and the government." Now, Ron Kuby, one of the attorneys, pointed out, "This was a clear attempt to go to the Supreme Court in a way that doesn't embarrass the government. The government has to argue that this new statute is not at all like the statute declared unconstitutional in Texas versus Johnson. It's not going to help them if the defendant in this case is Joey Johnson. Same flag, same defendant." The three who were charged have stated that Joey is the unindicted fourth defendant. Now, those three were Dave Blalock, who we'll be hearing from in just a minute, Sean Eichmann, and Dred Scott. Dave is with VVAW, which is Vietnam Veterans Against the War. Sean and Dred are revolutionary artists. You may recall Dred's piece, entitled "What is the Proper Way to Display a U.S. Flag," caused an uproar when it was part of a student exhibit last spring. The "maintain on the floor or ground" language in the flag law stems from this controversy. And Sean Eichmann is a curator of the Helms Degenerate Art Show in New York City. I mean, you gotta love a title like that. I mean, God bless him for coming up with that, the Helms Degenerate Art Show. I love it. And he's also a member of Refuse and Resist, which is a group here in New York City. Now, the four are being represented by the Center for Constitutional Rights, who handled Johnson's case at the Supreme Court. Lawyers William Kunstler, David Cole, Ron Kuby, and Nina Kraut are at the center of a legal strategy which revolves around the motion to dismiss the case based on the unconstitutionality of the Flag Protection Act. This motion was filed on December 5th. The prosecution's response is due January 12th, and the defendant's reply is due January 17th. A decision is expected soon after. Either the government or the defendants will appeal that decision to the Supreme Court under the expedited review section of the flag law. So it will be the motion to dismiss which will be the subject of Supreme Court review probably this spring, and as of this newsletter that I'm reading from here, it's unclear if or how the D.C. case and the Seattle case, which we'll hear a little bit about in a few minutes, will be related in court. But in any case, if the Supreme Court strikes down the law, then the charges will be dropped. If the Supreme Court upholds the law, then three will go to trial. It's fascinating to follow this kind of thing, and follow it we will here at WBAI on this and other programs. Now, what we're about to hear is a short speech from Dave Blalock, who was one of those people that that burned the flag. He's going to be explaining why he burns flags. It's something to think about. I mean, these people don't do this for a hobby. They have reasons. They think about what they're doing. Maybe not all people who burn flags think about it, but I can guarantee you these folks do. And whether you agree or not, it's worth listening to. Maybe you'll understand what's behind it. And then the question we'll be asking when we come back to you, our listeners, is this right? Should these people be allowed to do this? Is it a legal kind of a thing to burn flags? And any other kind of topics that that are on your mind. I'd especially like to hear from those people who disagree, because it's one thing to sit around here and just say, yeah, this is terrible, our rights are being infringed upon and all that kind of thing, but you know, I'd like to hear other views on it. I'd like to see how people think this is fair, because obviously I don't think it's fair that they've made a law to outlaw this. Again, for the purpose of those people that won't be with us when we come back, because it does happen, that's the way radio works. Sometimes people just tune out and fall asleep, things like that. I'm going to give you the address and name of this organization now, and I'll give it again later on, too, in case you want to become more involved. It's called the Emergency Committee to Stop the Flag Amendment and Laws. They're located at 189 Franklin Street in New York. The zip is 10013. And their phone number, which you can call now to get more information, is 212-941-5474. And we're going to go now into a speech by Dave Blalock. This was recorded this Sunday at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. And we want to thank the people at Stony Brook, at the SAB Concerts Committee, for helping us to get this this recording, and also the folks at WUSB Radio out in Stony Brook. What we're going to hear is Dave Blalock, and shortly after we will hear from Joey Johnson.
The I guess a lot of people, since we burnt the flag on the steps of the Capitol, a lot of people said, hey man, why'd you do that type of thing? And people were very surprised at how could a veteran who fought in the wars want to burn the American flag, because you hear a lot of the opposition out there around it, a lot of World War II vets and everybody else waving a flag saying it's a disgrace to burn the flag. And I'd like to say this on that point. When I look out here and I see a lot of the students out here, and I can remember, I was never a college student myself, but I can remember back when I was 18, 19 years old and everything. I mean, a town I grew up in Western Pennsylvania is a steel mill coal mine town. And I grew up pledging allegiance to the flag. I'm sure everybody else here has. Every morning you'd be in school and you do like this religious ritual and you pledge allegiance to the flag. So I was pretty much brainwashed into that whole scene right from Jump Street. Pledge allegiance to the flag. And those days we had John Wayne movies. Now they got Rambo type of movies. And then we had John Wayne movies. So he gets you all psyched up for the whole war move. So I volunteered for Vietnam. I volunteered for the Army. I joined in 1968, 1 year after graduating from high school. And it sort of struck me, because I didn't know that much about what was going on in the world. Being where I grew up at, there was no anti-war demonstrations going on out there. We were pretty much isolated from the rest of America and everything that was happening. But as soon as I got thrown into the Army, and you start seeing everything, you got running into people from all over the country, who were guys, black guys from the ghettos who were drafted in from the ghettos. You had guys, hillbilly guys from down south. You had people from all over being thrown into basic training. And in basic training, my impressions of the flag got much more stronger of hatred for it. And I'm going to describe that to you, because we went through basic training taught to hate. And the flag flew above buildings where we were constantly brainwashed into hating slopes, gooks, slant eyes. It was a whole heavy-duty racist number put on us to hate people of a different color skin and slanted eyes. The American flag threw above the bayonet training course, where we literally spent at least 8 hours throughout basic training sticking bayonets into yellow-skinned, slant-eyed silhouettes and chanting, kill, kill, kill without mercy. That type of a number was a heavy duty coming on my head. And whenever people started thinking of rebellion in basic training, they had the military, they had a stockade at Fort Jackson. There's a military prison there for anybody who spoke out against it or went against the game plan. The stockade was right there, and the American flag flew right above there. You were incarcerated and sentenced up to 6 months of hard labor for rebelling or speaking out against the U.S. war efforts that was going on in Vietnam. So pretty much I went through the whole number there, basically kept my mouth shut, and went right off into Vietnam. When I got into Vietnam and I landed, it was an interesting thing. When I landed at Benoit Air Base in 1969, February 69, it was during the Tet holidays over there. The Tet Offensive was a big number that happened the year before, so everybody's very nervous. There was various actions going on in 69. I get off the plane in Benoit Air Base, and I get off the plane, there's a horrible stench in the air. I always remember this. It was hot. It was the middle of winter time when I took off from the United States. It was winter. You land there, and it was like almost 100 degrees out, and it's very hot, humid, and this most horrible smell was floating in the air. We get hustled into one Quonset area where they're going to throw us on a bus, and I asked one of the guys who had been there for a while. I says, "Hey man, what's that smell?" He goes, "Hey, that's burning flesh. You're smelling human flesh, burnt flesh that's been going on, because they just napalmed right outside the gates of Benoit Air Base, trying to blow up Viet Cong. Supposedly Viet Cong were operating in the area, and you could smell the burnt flesh. And I always remember the American flag hanging there and the burnt flesh smell." Then they took us from Benoit Air Base, and they took us and put us in a place called Long Bin. It was a main processing area. From there, we were sent out to the various duties we were going on. And the same types of images kept coming. You see the American flag was everywhere there, too, flapping above all this stuff. And I was pretty scared on it, but I started seeing a lot of the other soldiers that were there, the black guys, the white guys, all these guys, people wearing peace symbols and stuff. I said, hey, well, that's pretty interesting, man. What are you guys wearing peace symbols for? And I still wasn't too, I was still pretty scared. They transferred me to my base camp. It was a small base camp called Longfon. And I get on my base camp, and my duty I was assigned to I ended up in a security platoon doing short range patrols, that type of number, guard duty, short range patrols. And my platoon sergeant, who's a brother, black dude from the Bay Area, he basically said, listen, man, he says, we ain't here to kill no Viet Cong, we're here to survive. He says, if you want to be gung ho, he says, you're going to die quick. I said, hey, man, not me. I says, I'm scared. I just go with the flow on this stuff. And pretty much most of the guys involved in my whole camp there, people were pretty much anti-war. At first it struck me kind of, wow, this is, you know, I got into it, but at first I said, wait, what the hell's going on here? And everybody, when you see the massive amounts of destruction that went on in that country, the massive B-52 runs where whole villages and towns and whole areas of the country decided were totally destroyed. You had the Agent Orange was dumped all over the place. Most of the areas, a lot of it was completely inhabitable, where you couldn't even, nothing could grow on it or anything like that. And you could see all of this stuff there was what our country was doing to these people over there. The Viet Cong in my area, in my camp, we hired what they call house girls. We hired them, we picked them up in the local village and brought them on our camp during the daytime. And these girls were basically hired, each guy paid $5 a month, and what they did was they did your laundry for you and that type of whole scene. And I could always remember when I come back, we come back from night patrol one day. When we went on patrol, we called it, you're supposed to be on search and destroy missions, we call it search and avoid. We'd go out in one part in a rubber plantation, sit down for 8 hours, smoke pot, and come back again at the end of the day. But one day we came back in, and the house girls were sitting, this is in August of 69, and the house girls were sitting there crying, and I didn't know what was going on. I thought maybe one of the guys was playing grab ass with them or something like that, you know, because generally we had a good rapport with the women in nobody was screwing around with them, and you had just like a friendly type of relationship with them, and they were crying and crying. I couldn't figure out what was going on it. So then what happened was I finally got one girl to talk to me, and I says, what are you crying? She says, Ho Chi Minh died. I says, Ho Chi Minh, he's just a communist. What are you crying about? She goes, you don't understand. Ho Chi Minh is the father of our country. And she tells me this whole history. She knew more about American history than I did. She says, in your country, when you had your revolution, you only had 1/3 of your people were back in the revolution. 1/3 were in the middle and didn't care who won it, and 1/3 back to British. She says, in our country, we got 75% of the population is back in the revolution kicking out foreign powers. And that really struck me hard on that deal. And anyway, I'm going on and on this thing, but I'll just tell you this is my lessons that was learned in Vietnam was it was heavy duty. The stuff that happened to the people over there and the massive destruction and everything else that happened. When I come back from Vietnam, I was stationed at Fort McClellan because I still had almost 14 months to do before I got out of the Army. And I was stationed in the Army there. And on these bases in the stateside, there was a massive GI movement formed. There was like over 300 underground newspapers being published by soldiers all around the United States and Europe and in Asia at that time. Anti-war newspapers published by soldiers. And I joined right in with that, and immediately the Army was doing everything they could to stop us from speaking out, threatening us with jail. We were not allowed to have newspapers on us, anything like that. Constantly being called in for interrogation. I always remember being called in for interrogation by military intelligence, and the American flag is waving right above there, and they're saying, you can't do this, and you can't say that, and you can't write this, and you can't do that. Constantly saying, you can't do all this stuff. I get out of the Army, I went through that whole scene, my 14 months, and I became very much more involved in the whole anti-war movement while I was still in the Army. When I got out of the Army, I always remember very distinctly the American flag. I joined this organization, Vietnam Veterans Against the War. There was literally almost 80,000 members at this time in 1971. You had veterans had thrown their medals away back at the White House. 2,000 veterans gathered in April of 71. And massively in front of the White House and threw back their war medals and everything else in disgust with what the U.S. was doing in Vietnam and demanding an end to the war. And we marched in New York City. There was what they called a Home with Honor parade. Richard Nixon was the president at that time. And he called for a Home with Honor parade and which veterans, to honor the Vietnam veterans. It was a huge parade. They brought in all these military units. They brought in Army units, you know, Navy, Marine Corps, all this type of stuff to march in this big, huge parade. The only, and plus the American Legion, the VFW, and a lot of World War II vets. The only Vietnam veterans that marched in that parade as a political grouping was this organization, Vietnam Veterans Against the War. Now, we marched up Fifth Avenue, up to 72nd Street, where there's a reviewing stand. And as we marched up there, all the people crowding along the streets were cheering us Vietnam veterans. We had in front of our main banner, a huge banner we carried leading this contingent, was no honor, no honor here, no honor there. No honor in what we did in Vietnam. And we were cheered and cheered, a lot of cheers of people, you know, giving us the fist and the high sign and everything like that, till we got to the reviewing stand. Up by the reviewing stand, there were several hundred people there waving the American flag. And these people were leaning over and spitting on us. I was literally insulted and spit on by these people waving the goddamn flag. And I always remember that. Nobody can ever change that in my mind. I know what that flag was. And these people were waving that thing and spitting on us because we were anti-war. And all the officers and dignitaries on the reviewing stand turned around and did an about face on us. They turned their back to us on a thing. And that was, we understood they might do this. But when you had all these people in a population waving the flag and spitting on us, that type of thing stuck in my memory. And so when people ask me why I burnt the flag, that was part of it. It was those experiences that I went through from being in basic training, being in Vietnam, after Vietnam, and as an anti-war veteran out there. And then I look around and I see nowadays, since that whole time period, I've had the flag come down on me. I got a job in a post office in the mid-70s, and we had a strike in 1978. And all of a sudden the government says, you're not allowed to have a strike. It's illegal for postal workers to strike, like it is Poland. You know, I guess Polish workers can't strike either. And they brought out the federal marshals come and kicked down the door of my house one night to try to serve arrest warrants on us because I was one of the strike leaders in the place. And it was a whole heavy duty number. And all those people, the federal marshals and all of them, all wearing the American flag again. So when people talk about constitutional rights and freedoms, I know that the American flag does not stand for that. The American flag stands for suppression of people. Where I grew up at in western Pennsylvania, the area out there, I still got family, friends that live out there. Right now, you've got a strike going on in the Pittston Coal Company. It's been on strike for 8 months, and it's a state of martial law in that whole area of Virginia. People, thousands and thousands of people have been arrested under these laws. They're not allowed to even drive in certain areas. Everything is under martial law, and there's federal marshals, and they're wearing the flag. The flag is standing over all the suppression that's happening there. In New Brunswick, New Jersey, just recently, for the black people living in the ghettos and stuff, there's even, the flag stands for more repression and stuff there. The, under the guise of war on drugs, you have local police, drug task force, smashing down the whole top floor of an apartment. This is about 2-3 months ago. Went through all these huge, the big buildings where people were forced to live in, the whole top floor, but they kicked down all the apartments. They found two joints out of like 40 apartment doors they kicked down, but they're terrorizing people all over the place under the guise of this war on drugs. They're going in, they have armed police running around all the time, beating the shit out of people. Everything like that is happening. So to me, that's why I burnt the flag. I burnt the flag for what it stands for, and I burnt the flag because I think people got to be opening their minds up to what's happening in America today. When the government come out and try to force patriotism down people's throat, something is seriously wrong there. And you better examine it carefully. That's all I got to say.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy.
It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. My blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Think of all the hate there is in Red China, then take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace. And tell me over and over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. No, no, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
First of all, sir, what is your principal criticism of the way that we have conducted our war in Korea?
It's my opinion that we should fight the war to win in Korea, rather than try to settle it at the diplomatic table, which is impossible when you're dealing with Russia.
Well, Mr. Van Zandt, would you extend your will to win so far as to include the atomic bomb?
Very definitely, Dr. Peterson. I've always been a firm believer that we should use the atomic bomb, not only in Korea, but north of the Yalu River in Manchuria. I think that there are several targets in northern Korea we could use. That is, we could destroy them with the atomic bomb. We could destroy them and contaminate them.
There will soon be an end to this cold and wicked war. When those hard-headed communists get what they're looking for, only one thing that will stop them and their atrocious fun. If General MacArthur drops a atomic bomb, now over in Korea, our boys have fought to fail. But they died just like heroes amid a minute shot and shell. They had their hands tied behind them and were murdered by the score, by those dirty-minded communists who started this sad war. They'll be fired just in the middle, flying all around, and the radioactivity will burn them to the ground. If there's any commies left, they'll be all on the run if General MacArthur drops a atomic bomb. Atomic bomb. hand of schemes. Just leave it to the general, for it really has the nerve to give those no good communists just what they deserve. There'll be fire, dust, and metal flying all around, and red. Any commies left, they'll be all on the run if General MacArthur drops a atomic bomb.
And that's in the name of American patriotism there. That was Jackie Dull and his Pickled Peppers, recorded in 1951 or thereabouts, when they dropped the atomic bomb. It comes from a compilation of such songs, the soundtrack to Atomic Cafe. And I always thought that was both a terrific film and a terrific record for one reason. For one very good reason. There was never any person on there narrating saying, these people are wrong. Instead, they just let them say it themselves. They let them spout their rhetoric. And now, 30 or so years later, 40 years later, we can see, at least some of us can see, that these people were crazy wanting to drop atomic bombs everywhere. I mean, yeah, I know there's people around today that still want to do that, but I think for the most part we realize that's just not the righteous thing to do when you look upon the entire world as a community. And fortunately, Truman won that battle with his commanding general, Douglas MacArthur. For those that aren't versed, or for those that just want to remember, in 1950, the Korean War wasn't going all that well for the Allies, and a lot of Americans wanted to drop the atom bomb on North Korea, and on China, for that matter. Why not, you know? I mean, it worked in Japan, stopped that war, so it could work anywhere, you know? Maybe even if we have some skirmishes, you know, with students or minorities in this country, you know, just as a warning. But MacArthur wanted to use the atomic bomb, and Truman didn't want to use the atomic bomb, so the story goes. And of course, MacArthur was eventually dumped by Truman, and that's the way it wound up. We also heard from Barry McGuire and The Eve of Destruction, which kind of put into music some of the things that Dave Blalock was saying beforehand. Dave Blalock, who had given a speech at the State University of New York at Stony Brook this past Sunday as to why he burned the American flag and why he will continue to burn the American flag despite the law that was passed on October 28th saying that that is, in fact, a crime. And we're going to take phone calls now for the next period, 279-3400, area code 212. And I'd like to know what people out there have to think. No long speeches, please. Just a general overview as to whether or not this whole thing is being blown way out of proportion. And as I said before, I'd like especially to hear from people that think other things than what I'm saying here. You know, if you want to perhaps bring up some points that I might have missed or something like that. 212-279-3400 is our telephone number. And this piece from the same newsletter I was looking at before. On November 29th, seven people were indicted in Seattle for their participation in the Festival of Defiance, where flags were burned the moment the flag law went into effect. This event was beamed out over the national media, where millions saw 500 people led by Vietnam veterans against the war, anti-imperialist in parentheses, that's what the AI stands for, when they saw the Vietnam veterans against the war and 500 people symbolically napalm 1,000 flags at midnight on October 28th. One national evening news broadcast stated, "Last night, those who once fought for the flag burned it. This open defiance of the flag law, and especially the role of veterans, poked a big hole in the lie that blind obedience to country is the order of the day in the USA." Again, our phone number, I'm surprised by the small number of calls we're getting here. I thought this was a major issue. 279-3400. Call us now, regardless of your opinion. Just call us to tell us how you feel about this issue, if it affects you at all, if there's a bigger picture it might paint for the rest of the country or for other countries. Anyway, none of the seven charged were Vietnam veterans, even though Randy Rowland of VVAW had announced to the press that he was defying the law and had personally begun the flag burning, another case of selective non-prosecution. It seems that the government wants to avoid the truth that many veterans oppose mandatory patriotism because of their experiences with where it can lead. The seven indictees have been charged under the flag law and also with destruction of government property. This stems from the now famous photo of the demonstrators running a burning flag up a post office flagpole. Four of the seven haven't even been identified yet, except for videos taken by the police. Three John Does and one Jane Doe are at large, and the concept that we are all Jane / John Doe is spreading. At a press conference immediately after the indictments, all the speakers wore I Am Jane / John Doe armbands. Motions in the case are due December 21st, and a trial date has been set for February 5th. Progressive lawyers in Seattle have rushed to the defense and will be appealing based on the unconstitutionality of the flag law. Again, this is from the newsletter of the Emergency Committee to Stop the Flag Amendment and Laws. And whether you agree with them or not as to exactly what they say as far as imperialist and this and that, I think the issue is a bit bigger than that. And I know a lot of people, even conservatives, yes, I do talk to conservatives now and then, who think that this is a very dangerous precedent to be setting. What do you think? 279-3400. Good morning.
Is this WBAI?
That's what it is. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was kind of wondering, I've been thinking about this whole thing. You know, I was in Vietnam. I was with the 101st Airborne Division. That was a long time ago. And most of what that guy said is pretty accurate, I guess. But about burning the flag, I mean, like the flag is like a symbol. It's kind of like an idea, and you can't burn an idea. You can burn the material.
Uh-huh.
You can't really burn the flag. I mean, I don't see why, you know.
Well, what you said, it's a symbol.
Yeah.
And burning the flag is a symbol in itself.
Well, that's true, I suppose.
That's another symbol.
Yeah.
So why do you think people are so incensed? Or maybe people aren't incensed. Maybe it's just the politicians that are getting in a flurry about this. What do you think it is? What sparked this? Why are we so desperate, and why do you think we need to do this?
Oh, well, I think that we've become, you know, people are just holding on to their beliefs because everything's getting eroded anyway. I mean, it's just, they've just become sort of desperate.
Well, what's becoming eroded?
Oh, I don't know. It's, you know, after Vietnam, I went to Europe and stayed there for about 12 years. I just was sort of disgusted with the government and society in general. And I just didn't believe anything anymore. And I don't know.
So, wait, do you think this is a dangerous precedent? Do you think it's going to make any significant difference?
No, I really don't think it means anything at all. I think it's so stupid.
What, the whole furor over the issue, or the issue itself?
The issue itself, I think, is stupid.
Uh-huh. Do you think there should have been a law in the first place?
I don't really, you know, it's just kind of for me, it's kind of amusing.
Well, yeah, and that's, you touch upon an important point there. Never lose sight of the humor in a situation. There's no point getting all poker-faced about it. I mean, we can have a lot of fun with this issue. We can make fools of the people that that disagree with us one way or the other. Let's at least approach it in that way. I mean, it's a serious issue, but let's not get so serious about it that we lose sight of the rest of our lives. And I know some people have done that already.
The guy who made that speech, I think he has a point, and that is that the flag doesn't represent what it used to represent. I mean, I don't know. You know, he goes to Vietnam and he sees these flags and the stinking smell of the flesh and everything. You know, it's just, you know, we're brainwashed in school, in our early years to believe one thing, and then you find out it's not that at all.
Yeah, well, you know, look at it this way. I mean, maybe when you say we're brainwashed in school, that might turn off some people. But look at it in another way. You go to school when you're, what, 4 or 5 years old, and you say the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, I didn't know what the hell the Pledge of Allegiance meant. I just said it because I was supposed to say it. And how can they expect any 4 or 5-year-old kid to know what the Pledge of Allegiance means? I mean, to really understand what it's all about. So if there's no way the kids can understand what it's all about, why are they saying it? It's to get you in the habit.
Yeah.
And then by the time you reach an adult type of life, you say, what was that all about anyway?
Yeah.
It's a very subtle, maybe not such a subtle form of brainwashing, but it's...
If you get them to do one little thing over and over again, they become like a part of the sheep.
Right, and you associate it with something good, like, you know, well, I guess maybe school isn't all that good for most people, but, something not harmful. They're not beating people while they're saying the Pledge of Allegiance, so it becomes sort of incorporated in your life as, well, you know, it's that thing I did in childhood, and that's, it's just, you know, saying the Pledge of Allegiance is what kids do, and are we going to outlaw something that kids do? It's sick, you know? It's sort of a parallel there, and... I just don't see why it's necessary. If this is the greatest country in the earth, as we keep saying to ourselves, why do we need to have a law to protect it from its own people?
I don't know. I think we're the biggest country in the earth, or one of the biggest.
Well, of course, that's a matter of opinion. But it's something that is constantly heaped at us by the media, by the government, and by certain rednecks and pickup trucks. Yeah. But... It's something we should be asking. And how can you call somebody non-patriotic for wanting to talk about this, wanting to bring it, to the front and debate it? That's, by calling somebody anti-American for that, you are, in fact, being anti-American. Not you, of course. You, in the third-person sense.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to go to some more calls. Thanks for calling, sir.
Bye-bye.
Okay. 279-3400. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you tonight?
Okay. How are you?
Okay. I think that this whole issue just shows the general ignorance of the public in our country.
In what way?
Well, wait, the fact that people are sitting here and they're saying how great America is, and that if you're burning the flag, then you're doing such a terrible crime to the country. But in reality, burning the whole thing that makes America great is for the people, they can do whatever they want to do. And that's what the whole flag stands for the idea that people have their freedoms and their decisions to do whatever they want to do.
Do whatever they want to do within a certain amount of reason, but I see what you're saying.
It's not causing harm to anybody else, you know? I mean, you can do, basically, I think there are a lot of issues in America today which are really sensitive, issues like the Ku Klux Klan and all these racial things. When they're allowed to have gatherings, they're allowed to have meetings, not allowed for demonstrations, which is the way a lot of people think it shouldn't be. But what makes America great is that people can state their opinion as long as it doesn't cause direct harm to other people.
Right. Now, I have to give credit to the ACLU, and I'm sure this will get me in trouble if I try running for president in a few years, but I give them credit for actually standing behind a group as hated as the American Nazi Party to say they've got the right to have a meeting or a demonstration or whatever. They have that right, as disgusting as it may be to many of us. And... I don't put the flag burners in the same league as Nazis, but they certainly have the right to exercise their First Amendment rights, no matter how offensive it may be to somebody else, unless they physically harm or vandalize something that doesn't belong to them. But as far as I know, these flags that they're burning are flags that they've bought and paid for, so they can do whatever they want with them.
Exactly. It's just by saying it, just a paradox in itself. You're saying, well, I think America is great because it's free, but you can't do it if you want to. You have to listen to what we think is right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's we seem to be getting more. I don't know. We're more worried about these things. I don't know why we are. Why is the government? Why are some of the citizens so paranoid? That any kind of... What's the next step? We outlaw burning flags now. Okay, what are we going to outlaw next? Talking about burning flags?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things you can read in. Because burning a flag is not the only way to show disrespect for the flag. In fact, we'll get into that a little later. I have a whole list here of ways of doing that. And it's scary. And I'd also like to know, if anyone out there has this information, please call in with it. How many other countries have such laws? Or are there any kind of variations on this law? I'd like to know that. Thanks for calling, sir. 279-3400 is our phone number. We're talking about flag burning here on WBAI in New York. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hello, Emmanuel.
Yes, hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I think this whole flag-burning issue is a sign of a country in decline, where they start to make laws about their symbols and things like that. It's one thing to have Iranians burning flags and everyone can say, oh, they're against America and so forth, but it's another thing when images of Americans burning flag in America are broadcast to other countries. It shows a sort of internal weakness, which I don't think America can afford to have be shown around the world.
Well, does that justify our banning the action in itself?
No, it doesn't justify the action. It's what they do to preserve this image of greatness. I mean, we're a debtor nation now, and you know, you have homeless people and people out of work, and industry has fled to the third world and so forth. So I think America is still holding on to its notion of power. It has military power, but as far as power in other means in human terms, I think it has lost much of that.
And that's something we really should be looking at. Something I think that's a direct result of all the military might that we've built up. We've neglected our own country, and it is falling apart to a degree. There's lots of potential still there, but there's not a significant amount of people burning flags in the streets. So maybe, you know, in other parts of the world they're getting the wrong picture. But the fact that people are burning flags and the fact that this is an issue at all, I think we should be looking at that, not fighting the symptom, but fighting, you know, what could be a disease.
Well, the most ironic thing I saw about this was during the presidential election, when George Bush was in the flag factory, you know, shaking hands with all these people. And those are the same people who a few months later, he vote down a raise to pay those same people an extra 50 cents an hour, you know?
Right.
So the irony there, yeah, America's great and all that, but yet still, you know, he finds it hard to give the, you know, people making minimum wage an extra $1.25 or whatever exactly it was.
Uh-huh. It's a
paradox there.
It's rather subtle. I mean, yeah, you could say, well, he had his reasons for doing that, but the way in which it's done, kind of the subtle contempt for the working people and for the poor, certainly, that emanates from the Reagan administration and from the Bush administration, that says something.
Yes, it does.
And so do people that burn flags. They're saying something. It's a form of expression. And, you know, I don't think words should be banned. I don't think those kind of demonstrations should be banned. It's sad when you have to ban things like that. I mean, you know, what we're doing is resorting to the same tactics that those governments that we call totalitarian have been doing for years, you know, saying no public assembly, no demonstrations, no church meetings or protests or elections or all kinds of things like that.
Yeah, that's true. And like the other callers, I too was a veteran, but more recent times during the Grenada times, and I started to have to question that, you know, why are we invading a little country called Grenada? And that's the reason why I left the Marine Corps, because my politics changed. I don't think you can be politically minded and be in the military. There's just too much conflict there.
No, it's like I know lots of people that get involved with the phone company, and you can't think and work for the phone company because they don't want people to ask a lot of questions. You know, and it's the same thing in the military. They don't want you to ask a lot of questions until they get all the information into you, and then you know, then you go out, you're sent out, and you're all programmed, and you can
exactly.
I know lots of people. It's funny. I know lots of people that have gone into the military, and you know, perhaps this isn't such a bad thing for them, but they're kind of stupid when they go in. In fact, sometimes they're very stupid when they go in. And there's really, you know, nothing much for them in our society to do except, you know, hang out in street corners and things. And then they come back from the military after a couple of years, and suddenly they're well-spoken. They can actually put a sentence together. Of course, what they're saying is enough to make me want to run away, but they say it well, you know, and that's it's something. It's a credit to the tactics of the military, not to what they are actually doing, but what they do does work.
Oh, yes. Well, I was one of the fortunate ones. I did manage to get some very technical training while I was in the military, but I'm like, 10% of the whole bunch. But it is true, the military does broaden your horizons, because when there's someone in the White House who's asleep most of the time, can send you off to your death, you kind of have to be aware of things and, you know, be aware of what's going on in the world and be very analytical of the political scene.
How hard was it to be a thinking person in the military?
Very hard. You end up contradicting a lot of people who outrank you and get on their
Can you perhaps give me a specific example, just maybe a horror story or something nice like that?
Well, one story was I was in a unit that did coordination for medical evacuations. And I had suggested to them that since the military radios was not serving the purpose that it was intended for, that we have a commercially made radio put in, and then we would be able to contact the various units with this better quality commercial radio. Well, that didn't happen until I think about 6 or 8 people fell out of a helicopter and we could not get to them because there was no communications available. And the next day, there was a radio there. They had it installed and everything the next day.
Why was there no radio before?
Well, they just didn't. We told our superiors, hey, we need a radio of this particular type, and it went from there. I never heard anything about it until this incident happened. And they were ready to come down on us, but luckily we had tape to back us up. We made the calls out, and no one responded because no one could get in touch with us.
But I don't understand. Why would it be military policy not to have a radio? Why would that be looked upon?
We didn't have a radio, but it was a military-type radio. The type, it was made by Collins Military Radio Communications Division, and it wasn't worth the money you
oh, I see.
For it. So I suggested a commercial radio, a good commercial radio, which could, you know, go to communications properly.
It's sort of like those East European devices that don't work, and you know, people suggest getting Western European devices.
Nah, this was made in America.
Yes, but I'm talking about the you know, the government wants to use something that's inefficient and isn't working, but they want to use it anyway to save face.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously the other one works better, but they just try to ignore that.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that really clenched it was one of the people that died was a senior officer, I think like a colonel or a brigadier general. That's why they moved so fast on it. Had there been some enlisted people, I don't think they would have jumped as hard on it as they did. But, you know, someone who had some juice was pretty pissed, and that's why they jumped on it like that.
Hmm.
That just goes to show if you don't worth much, they just you're just cannon fodder, as they say.
Okay, so the wrap-ups or your thoughts on the whole flag controversy were?
It's all a ruse. It's all a ruse. We're moving into like a 1984 scenario, George Will type thing, and you know, doublethink and doublespeak and all the rest of it. We're running after false issues.
Well, you sure got to be careful what you say. And a doublethink is a good analogy for a politician today, because he may feel one thing, but if he says it, even though it's imperfect. Alignment with democracy and with the Constitution and everything like that, he'll wish that he hadn't said it, because it's so easy to turn the words around and say, that means you're not patriotic. And when you're not patriotic, you get voted out of office.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But I think we need a few politicians to stand up and say, that's crap, you know, that's not it at all. I'm as patriotic as you. And that's the major thing I disagree with these particular flag burners on. I was talking to a bunch of them before the lecture on Sunday, and one thing I was asking them was, you know, why don't you take the flag as your own? Instead of giving it to these people waving flags on the side and spitting on you, you're every bit as American as they are. You know, when the Czechs were marching 2 weeks ago, you saw flags everywhere, Czechoslovakian flags, because it's their country. It's their flag. They can wave the flag if they want, and so can people demonstrating against the policies. They're every bit as American as people that support the policies.
That's true.
Of course, if you burn the flag, I guess you're sort of saying, you know, to hell with that. But
but
the idea is still there, you know.
Yeah, but they're getting democracy and liberation and all that. Yeah, they have the right to wave the flag then. And. And I would too if that was occurring, but it's not. You know, you're in jeopardy of losing your job, and the economy's going down. And hey, what's the wave the flag about? Tell me.
Well,
things are not going great. Yeah, so the Russians are friends with America now, but that doesn't really affect my life.
You see, I'm not very much in favor of waving any kind of flag because of all the, you know, the garbage that's come out of doing that in the past, not just in this country, but all over the place. I mean, you can get shot dead in Israel for waving a Palestinian flag. What kind of nonsense is that anyway? You know, it's a symbol. It's a symbol. And if waving a symbol poses that much of a threat, then perhaps you better start thinking why you're in power in the first place.
Yeah.
It's a sad state of affairs. And when you start taking symbols too seriously, you lose sight of the realities, what the symbols stand for. You just sort of forget about those and get, you know, it's like being drunk or something. And that's what I think is going on. We're drunk on patriotism and nationalism. And I think we're better than that. And if anything, you know, the flag or just the, you know, the premise of the country holds some hope because it's possible for us to shake this off. But, you know, it's not going to happen if we don't do it, you know.
Yeah.
That's my thought on it.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, though, not related. On the last show that you were on, you dealt with the El Salvador issue.
Uh-huh.
You played some music at the beginning of the program. I think it was some Jamaican reggae music. Can you give me the name of the group, the artist?
That was, I'm glad you brought that up. That was Mikey Dredd.
Mikey Dredd.
Yeah, it was a record called Roots and Culture. Actually, I played the B-side of that, which was called Jungle Dredd. If you can find that record, my hat's off to you, but I don't think you will. It's from Dredd at the Controls.
What?
Dredd at the Controls, I believe, is the name of the record company, although it might be I might be wrong on that. But go to Utica Avenue in Brooklyn and wander around the reggae stores there. I'm sure you might find that. But I'm especially glad you brought that up because there was another record I played that a lot of people were asking about later on in the show called Christianity is Stupid, Communism is Good. Now, you know, you can interpret that any way you want, but that was by a band called Negative Land. And that was the album that's in the process of coming out, which I understand they're being sued for, so it must be a really good one, but the one that was out about a year or so ago. So that was that for all those people that were asking.
I see.
Anyway, thanks for calling, sir.
Are you going to become a regular on BAI?
Well, I'll be filling in for Tom Whisker next week too, and after that we don't know.
Uh-huh.
But you know, hopefully I'll be appearing someplace on the WBAI schedule.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks for calling. It's about 13 minutes after 12 o'clock. This is Emmanuel Goldstein filling in for Tom Whisker. And I'd like to take a look at something here. And again, you can interpret this any way you want, but it's an interesting parallel. It was brought up by the folks that put out this newsletter. And again, they are the Emergency Committee to Stop the Flag Amendment and Laws, located at 189 Franklin Street in New York. And their phone number is 941-5474, area code 212, if you'd like to get more information from them. They printed a little thing from 1932 Germany. It's a quotation from the Statutory Criminal Law of Germany, written on December 19th, 1932. And this is what it says. Whoever publicly profanes the Reich or one of the states incorporated into it, its constitution, colors, or flag, or the German armed forces, or maliciously and with premeditation exposes them to contempt, shall be punished by imprisonment. And then, right next to it, they have the Flag Protection Act of 1989 in the United States. Whoever knowingly mutilates, defaces, physically defiles, burns, maintains on the floor or ground, or tramples upon any flag of the United States, shall be fined under this title, or in prison for not more than 1 year, or both. I realize legal mumbo-jumbo tends to be similar no matter what language you're speaking in, but look where one of those things led. I mean, that was 1932. And you have to wonder, why would they feel so compelled to make a law to protect these things? Perhaps defensive states rise to do indefensible things. Also, I'm curious as to those folks that support this. That's why I'd really like to hear from them. I wonder where they are. I mean, I'm not going to jump on them. They're probably going to jump on me, but I would like to, you know, hear some logic, other logic, too. Today, it's flag burning. Okay, listen to this German law. It's not just flag burning. It's anyone who publicly profanes the Reich, in our case it would be the country in any form, or one of the states incorporated into it, New York, New Jersey, that kind of thing. It's constitution. Okay, is it legal to burn the Constitution? Is it legal to, you know, to expose them to contempt? Okay, the German armed forces here, the American armed forces. Can we say horrible things about the American armed forces? Sure, we can. We can say what we want about them. Just like we can say what we want about anything. But as you can see, they had no trouble at all wrapping this all up into one neat law. Flags, colors, constitution, armed forces, states, the country itself. So how close do you think we are to that? And would those people that support the ban on flag burning, would they support a ban on constitution bashing or military bashing or general discontent with the country? You see, it's a dangerous ground, and I'm really kind of worried about the whole thing because I just wonder where it's going to lead. And why do we need it? That's the big question. Why do we need it? Our number is 279-3400. We're going to take a couple more calls, then we're going to go into the Joey Johnson speech, which was also recorded this past Sunday at Stony Brook. And Joey Johnson, for those that don't know, is the person that started this whole mess. Yes, he's the one that the Supreme Court had a ruling on over the summer, and the Supreme Court agreed with him. The Supreme Court said what Joey Johnson did was protected under the First Amendment. And when you don't like something and you're in power, you change the laws, and that's pretty much what's happening right now, or what has already happened. 279-3400. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, B.A. Hi, I'm just going up in the... Like, hello?
Can you speak up, please?
Yeah. Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm on the air now.
Yes.
No, the only thing is that the flag-burning issue seems to me to be more reminiscent of McCarthyism.
Well, that's, it doesn't take long to reach that conclusion, in my opinion, but why do you think so?
Well, why? Because it's totally irrelevant in terms of the general public. It has no mean effect other than influencing politicians. It's just much like prior to the election, they got involved with the liberalism issue, L, and now they're bringing up flag burning as another issue. And it's kind of indefensible, but it seems that it's more just a ploy just to basically keep politicians in line.
A good way to get votes is to support something like this.
Control votes, really.
Uh-huh.
Limits the debate to such an extent. But, I mean, in terms of an actual crime, it's totally irrelevant because it really doesn't harm anyone. And such a small fragment of the population is really affected, it's totally irrelevant to rule against it.
Uh-huh.
It's a great way to control a population or to limit a debate. And that's really where its danger lies. It has nothing whatsoever to do with burning the flag. It's really a question of defining patriotism. And that's where it harkens back to McCarthyism.
Do you think we've learned anything from that? From McCarthyism?
Probably not. The problem is because the media is so limited in terms of disseminating information, discussing points of view, that debate itself is so limited in this country that you really can't have an intelligent discussion of anything. And the problem is that the political process being what it is almost recalcitrant. I mean, the problem that politicians have is really one of getting reelected.
That's true, and That is a major problem because that's all they're going to think about is how to. It's mass appeal. Everything is mass appeal. You want the biggest ratings. You want the most votes.
Well, the thing is that you can keep politicians in line solely by defining the issues of where patriotism lies, which is totally relevant to the actual values of patriotism. So they basically go after labels. You know, somebody's how can I say it? You know, are you for flag burning, for the death penalty, for abortion? I mean, the spectrum is so really limited.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, you can get around that by just saying, I'm for democracy, I'm for choice, you know, and I'm not for people going around killing each other.
Well, even democracy has become an aberration because you're living in a world of doublespeak. Because really people don't discuss the meaning of words, they just discuss the words themselves. And that's the problem, that there's certain, how can I say it, distortion of language. But there's almost a a double meaning given to the word itself. You know, we talk about democracy in this country, yet they look what's going on in Eastern Europe. They went out in the streets, and they had a popular referendum in a relatively short period of time, were able to dramatically affect change within their, supposedly affect change within their governments, which is unheard of in this country.
Right, and I strongly, strongly believe at this point, and I couldn't have said this a year ago, that democracy is much more alive in Eastern Europe than it is in the United States.
No, it's probably, in this country, I hate to say it, but, you know, if you want to really examine the way democracy is used in this country, you could probably substitute demagoguery for it and get closer to its actual meaning. But it's all facade. That's really what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for your opinion, sir.
Okay.
All right. And our phone number is 279-3400. Good morning.
Hello, Emmanuel. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
First of all, I want to say I really enjoy your program. Okay, I'm going to disagree with you, but it's funny. It's one of these things where I agree with you politically. I would say, you know, I agree with you. But okay, now bear with me. I think there's something sort of cliched, and you know, please take this kindly, and sort of smarmy about certain things. Okay, you take the movie Atomic Cafe. Now, you know, that's a good movie and all that, but the thing is, the idea of taking the worst proponents of something and just putting them up there is like, there's something so fat, there's a facileness about it.
Except, sir, those people weren't the lunatic fringe. They were the ones in power.
Okay, but I'll tell you what I specifically just, you know, you talk about rednecks and pickup trucks. You know, that's so dated type of you know, easy rider type of talk. And well, also, I'm really against imprecision in thought. For instance, a lot of things become part of, you know, code words like double speaker, catch 22, or Orwellian, and they're used imprecisely. Now, the thing is that you're comparing the fact. Okay, now I'm again. I think the flag law is ridiculous, and I think it was a stupid. It was just an attempt by politicians to jump on a popular bandwagon. But I'm also against flag burning because there's something really strangely ritualistic and about it. You know, I'm uncomfortable with it. I'm comfortable with, you know, it's like, you know, book burning. So, and the thing is, if there's something, if your body is diseased, what do? You burn a picture of yourself? I mean, it's like there's something. I would suggest you ask Joey Johnson sometime about if his party came to power, what would their stand be on censorship? They've had RCP people marching in anti-censorship things, but if you read the literature, you realize that, you know, you ask them if somebody would allow to wave a Nazi flag. You know,
okay.
Just ask that.
But sir, don't you see how that is, I understand your point, but that's irrelevant because
it is irrelevant. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I got off on that.
No, I just want to say, what are you going to do if they say no? We're going to impose full censorship. Are you going to say, well, because you're going to impose full censorship, that means you can't do this?
Right.
It doesn't matter what they say.
I'm for allowing anybody to burn the flag as again. And the thing is, again, comparing it. Okay, there's something. You know, this happens on WBAI a lot. They'll take. It's like from the small, there's, you know, some people, I think there's something to be said for a certain logic, and it's like, and I realize, okay, you take the Nazi statute and this statute, and it's like, okay, you're saying, because this, you know, this is, has similar to this, although if you notice in this law it says not more than 1 year, you know, and who knows what they could have done to you with that law. The thing is, because this means we're going to fascism. And also, for instance, again, this is sort of, I'm getting off my chest certain things about, like, WBI. You know, in other words, they compare Tiananmen Square with Tompkins Square. It's like any little thing, anything they can take to make a comparison, this is like that. And I think, you know, I'm from Chicago, and it's like, since I've come to New York, I've listened to a lot of radio, a lot of WBI, and a lot of the more conservative stations, too, you know, and it's like, it seems there's an endemic lack of logic. There's like, this is like that. and it's like, you're another. And that seems to be, you know, the things we say to kids, you know, about the logical, if people would follow, you know, laws of logic. I mean, in other words, it's like the only, if for instance, if there's a racial incident, and it seems the debates always are on how the media covers something, not on the issue itself. In other words, and I hear people say, well, the New York Times is right-wing establishment, and then I saw people say, right, the New York Times is left-wing commie radicals or whatever, you know. And it's like people, they judge issues on how it's covered in the media rather than on the facts. And the thing is, the flag burning, okay, I really wish I could say, you know, that, you know, I know you wanted somebody to oppose you, and but I can't say that I'm for the law or the amendment or whatever. But I think there's something really smarmy in the attitude that this is like that. You know, we're headed for some kind of Orwellian thing because of this law. That's nonsense.
Well,
and you know, it's nonsense, and it's like, and it's just funny. This is, you know, I was Joey Johnson, you know, getting upset that he's not, you know, he's not going to be prosecuted. It seems that we have a generation of revolutionary whiners, and I think the difference between why there's not going to be any revolution is because the old style tough revolutionaries, you went up against the government and you expected to clamp down and you dealt with it and you didn't whine about it. I hear they whine. I mean, there's a flag law in relation, you know, because somebody burned it. Now people are whining about it. Why even?
Well, like, sir, I have to agree with you on the whiners. I do see that myself. But as far as comparing taking some justice and saying, well, this could lead to that, I think that's necessary. You know, you have to do that on both ends.
Okay,
I think it's quite possible it could lead to.
It's like the thing is, I get upset sometimes when as a Jew, I do get upset sometimes when people compare Israeli actions to Nazi actions against the Palestinians. But then, you know, this is where I think you're going to agree with me. Then I realize, well, gee, you know, maybe if the Jews had thrown some rocks in 1931 or 32, maybe there wouldn't have been a Holocaust. So maybe, but the thing is, I think what the Palestinians are doing is good. But I, you know, and the thing is, for simple reason that it might prevent something some kind of terrible thing in the future.
Mm-hmm.
The future. But don't say that the Israelis are Nazis because they're reacting to it. In other words, when you make it do an action, you gotta expect the government to react. In other words, unless you're operating in some kind of total vacuum, the thing is that you don't whine about it. Give them the, you know, it's, you have to, there has to be, look, there is, I believe that there is a possibility to be physically brave and be a moral coward, you know, but I believe that it's impossible to be morally brave and also be a physically coward. In other words, you can't say I'm morally brave, but I'm a physical coward. You have to also be physically brave, but you can be physically brave and also be a moral coward.
I don't know if that's true, though. I mean, you're saying that that what somebody says is meaningless if they don't survive torture. You know, that's basically what you're saying.
No, please. See, again, there's such imprecision of thought here.
That's how I read that.
I'm not saying that's not what I said. I'm saying that if you're going to take a stand, you have to you combine torture. See, that's what happens. It's the, you know, the seven laws of logic that are taught in philosophy 101 are constantly being trampled upon, you know, and maybe you just throw them out the window. You say, you go for, you, this is what happens. You go from imprisonment to torture. I never even said that what they say is wrong. I'm saying if you choose to take a revolutionary stance, you got to know you're going to suffer hardship. Now, the thing is this, the fact that I'm not saying torture is right, but I'm not saying somebody who's been tortured has, you know, but I'm saying that if somebody gets arrested and put in jail, okay, that's bad and it shouldn't be, but there's an element of, again, you're taking countries where they do torture you. Now I understand that it's important to maybe to nip something in the bud. In other words, if you complain about you know, being arrested, maybe that'll prevent you from being tortured in the future. And the thing is that, but don't whine about it. I mean, again, I understand. I mean, I don't like the Paul Harvey style of radio. You know, everything is great, everything is peachy keen, and it's the lower classes that are ruining everything. That's ridiculous. I mean, the thing is that I think some people, you got to realize there's a great world out there besides New York. And this is where the redneck thing comes in. You know, again, I think there's a real elitism of, you know, especially among WBAI type listeners, and it's like there's...
But sir, aren't you generalizing too when you say things like that?
No, well, look, okay, maybe I am, that's true. I'm just, what I'm pointing out a specific instance. What if instead of redneck, what if you said, I'm trying to think of an equivalent for another minority. What if you said coon or something like that? I mean, what, you know, there's a lot of, it's like the old thing about, you know, the South, you know, those prejudices are ridiculous, and it's just dividing people. In other words, you want to be inclusive, not exclusive, and not elitist. The thing is this: I'm not accusing you of anything except you wanted somebody to make a little ways.
I'm kind of losing you. Can you? Kind of.
Yeah, you're right.
I
am digressing. I really didn't mean to talk this long. I'm just saying this. I'm saying, don't be such a snob. In other words, don't realize that there's people who legitimately don't believe what you believe, and they're not.